Guy Code with
Renner Oswere.
Welcome to another episode of the Guy Code. I am Renner Oswere. Guys, this is the special project I have been working on, and it is a special collaboration I did with mensgroup.com. A month back, one of the community managers of mensgroup.com, which is a Canadian-based men's group that helps mentor, helps rehabilitate, helps grow men online and in Canada locally through different partners all around the world, and especially in North America. And when they reached out to me, I really had the pleasure of connecting with their purpose, understanding what they do. And through the community manager, he suggested that I host the founder on one of the episodes of Guy Code, and I was pleased to do so. His name is Sean Gaylor. Over 10 plus years experience in men's mentorship. He has done a lot all over the world, from traveling to business to his own career. And guys, you really have a lot to gain from his story, and what you're about to listen to is a very fruitful discussion. It's a very lengthy one. I would say it's the longest episode I've ever done, about one hour, 45 minutes, but it's all very valuable engagement, interaction, and seeing how our experience all over the world as men is very, very similar from what we're experiencing. And it will really give a lot of insight for whoever is watching from any part of the world. So thank you again to mensgroup.com. I really suggest you guys check them out. We'll still be in touch with them. And until, without further ado, let's get into the recording.
I just wanted to get into Farah's fulfillment in life. What is true fulfillment? What defines true fulfillment for you?
Oh man, that's such a great question. Because when I was younger, I had a misguided idea of what fulfillment is. I thought fulfillment was going to be achieving things. You know, I thought fulfillment was going to be like being with a pretty girl or having money, you know. I thought fulfillment was going to be traveling to beautiful places, having business success. However, now that having lots of friends, like knowing lots of people, and unfortunately, none of that led to fulfillment for me. You know, quite the opposite. It left me feeling empty, because it's a really disappointing experience to get all that stuff and then to realize that, oh wow, I'm still unhappy, you know? And so what's fulfilling for me now is actually the simple things. It's like those simple little things that I like, uniquely like. I love walking my dog. You know, I love exercising. For me, that's surfing. I love being in the water, because I just feel connected to the ocean, and it makes me stop thinking about my work and my life and stuff, you know. Having good conversations with friends. A lot of people don't like talking about serious stuff. I really like it. That's why I run men's groups, you know. So the more that I tuned into like what I uniquely enjoy, that's when, and just focused on that, not what I thought I should be or should be doing, that's when I started feeling more fulfilled.
Well, that's great. So as far as understanding fulfillment from a young age, do you think that parenthood really plays a major part in how you were raised, in how you maybe you grew up in a community, or what they told you what fulfillment is when you saw guys with nice cars, nice houses? They said you should be like that person. So how does parenthood and how you grew up play a part in all the definition of fulfillment?
I think it plays the biggest role in the, in fulfillment and how you end up engaging with the world later on as an adult. Like the more that I learn about psychology, the more that I sit in men's groups, the more I realize it's those first 7 or 8 years of our lives when we have all the emotions, but we don't have the front of our brain developed yet, where we can't reason, we can't exhibit logic. And so we just feel a lot and we take a lot of things personally. And then those things go on to define how we think about ourselves and the world. And so for me, you know, my parents were very focused. We didn't have a lot of money growing up. We were actually maybe some of the least well-off people in our neighborhood. But we had a safe enough upbringing, you know, in the suburbs. And but my parents were very, they're very scarce with money. They were very envious of other people that had things that they didn't, material things. And most importantly for me, they really used a lot of disapproval and shame with me in the house to try to get me to learn how to be a successful boy or whatever, you know, fit into the world. And unfortunately, that led me to feeling not so good about myself. So as I became a teenager, as I got into my 20s, as I got into my 30s, it was like I had this feeling just underneath everything all the time of I'm not good enough as I am. And so I need to achieve to get these, to feel better, good about myself. I need to get money. I need to travel, you know? And so, yeah, that or those early years really, especially the shame and disapproval and the negative language that was used about some of the way that I was developing as my own person really affected me for most of my life. And it wasn't until like 2 or 3 years ago that I actually kind of got rid of that.
That's actually very interesting how you said, because I was listening to actually just today, I was listening to another podcast, how you said your dad was like the sixth of 11 children.
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
And his dad came from Ireland at 15.
Yes.
Traveled across to another continent to start from a scratch. So do you think that how he saw life happened for his dad and how he made it happen for you, do you think that it was a cycle that expected you to just carve your own path and become a survivor, just like the men came before you?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. I don't even know if my dad had the luxury of thinking about that. Because he was in a survival state, and some of the people listening in Kenya might be the same. Like my grandpa was working in the coal mines when he was 11, and coal mines are very difficult work, very dirty, terrible work. And then all of a sudden he decides to buy a ticket on his own to travel across the ocean and start a new life when he's 15. So he must have had a really difficult time and faced similar things to what some of the listeners, your listeners here might have faced as well. So he's in a survival state. And then of course my dad, he takes on that way of feeling and thinking in the world. And so he's in a survival state. And then of course I grow up and my default is survival state, but I'm living in first world paradise. Like I live in, you know, Canada. It's like we have all these social services and stuff, but and all these opportunities and luxuries. It's such a privilege, but I still feel that survival fear, like there's a tiger right around the corner at all times, like I'm gonna die if something happens. It's very real, and definitely got passed from my grandfather to my father to me.
Yeah, thanks for sharing that. And it's very true for guys all over the world, including even here in Kenya, as far as having the survival state. And you mentioned that as you began to engage with guys who are very successful and maybe they passed that survival state, now they were just thriving and they still were going through a lot as far as pressure. So do you think there's a lot we are not sharing as men, and that people who may not be living hand to mouth and are thriving in their business still have to go through a lot of pressure on maybe how to stay there? Or even continue to progress even more.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I'm a good example, right? Like I've been successful, and mensgroup.com is going very well right now. And I'm not making any money from it right now, but it looks like it will one day. And we're helping a lot of guys. And a lot of people are like, wow, look at Sean. He lives in a town where he can surf. He has a beautiful partner and he has this business that's meaningful and seems like it might be successful soon. Wow, he must feel good. The truth is that I still have this feeling, constant anxiety and kind of fear. And unless every day I have to manage it, and if I don't, it'll make me work unsustainably. It'll make me exhausted. I'll just do too many things. I will then start being a jerk to my partner. You know, it affects my relationship. It affects my health. That's why I got sick in the past. So like, I think I'm actually a good example of how that survival or whatever emotional stuff you have from your upbringing or stuff that happened to you along the way, might be in your teens, might have been in your 20s or your 30s or who knows when, that stuff will affect you on a day-to-day unless you address it. And it will, you know, really affect your health and your well-being and also your decisions. Like if I'm being honest, all that stuff from my childhood really defined the choices I made around work, partners, all this stuff. Like it dictated my life, even though I had no awareness at the time. Zero, you know? And I think a lot of guys that I've seen, yeah, I started a men's group for entrepreneurs. A lot of those entrepreneurs are very successful now. And I saw that a lot of them were driven by fear and by negative things. A lot of them weren't that happy in their home lives. A lot of them had the same fears that you and I might have, or and your listeners in Kenya or anywhere else might have. So the success and the money and stuff didn't help them escape from their internal challenges, you know?
Okay. And also, I just want to touch on in that, maybe what are some of the habits that you noticed help as far as dealing with the anxiety right now in this, just basic habits that we can practice every day, because there's so many things to be anxious about, whether COVID, whether war,
all these war. Yeah. All these things and lots of stuff going on in Africa right now. Yeah, you know, there's constant wars going on, genocides. Yeah. It's all very real stuff. Good question. And part of your last question, Renee, was that, like, you know, do men let themselves feel this stuff, or, you know, do men talk about this stuff? And the answer is no. Generally, men don't, because we're scared. Mm. We're scared of being seen as weak. Mm. Or gay or whatever, you know, ridicule there might be. And so we don't talk about what's actually happening. That's why we have men's group. But so for me, the practice that I've seen work for me to manage and get through this stuff, and a lot of guys in men's group, is really simple. We all have these things from our past, these painful experiences, where we might not have been able to express the emotions, right? If you're a young kid, you can't get angry at your parents. It's going to make things worse. And so unfortunately, our nervous systems hold on to that. That energy that was released in the body through hormones to run away from the tiger, which is your parents yelling at you. You know, that stays in your nervous system. I don't know why. It just seems to be a defect of the human body. So you can go through the world, and then what happens is when you run into other situations that remind you of that painful event, it will then, you'll then feel these intense feelings again. Mm-hmm. Right. And so people will often have disproportionately large emotional responses to a situation. So like, let's say I'm talking to somebody and they say something and I get super upset about it. Well, I'm actually not getting upset about what they said. It's probably that what they said reminds me of something painful from my past. Mm. So then the practice of actually like clearing this stuff out so that you're not as triggered, and so you can communicate better in your relationship and make better decisions around work or whatever, is really simple. Anytime you feel emotional and negative emotions, I guess you could call them, sad, anxious, angry, whatever things pop up for you, step away from what you're doing and just breathe for like a minute and just hang out with those feelings. That's it. And it could be 10 times a day. That honestly is the only thing that's ever worked consistently across the board for guys in men's group or myself. Because what you're doing is you're not ignoring those emotions like men were taught to do. You're now all of a sudden letting them be there and building a relationship with them. And what's going to happen is if you keep doing that over time, you're going to those emotions are going to start to come out more, and all of a sudden you'll start crying and you don't really understand why. But what's happening is you're releasing emotions from that pressure cooker of past pain. And then as a result, moving forward, you're not going to be as triggered. And so it's really simple. It's like, I say something you don't like, Renee, just pause this interview, step away, breathe for a minute. Just hang out with those feelings, get curious. If you're at a social event, go to the bathroom, just close the door, lean up against the wall, and just breathe into that. I do that all the time still. I'll go to the bathroom and just like have a second. And sometimes I'll cry, sometimes I'll feel rage, but usually it's just a little bit of emotion and then it's gone. That's the move I've seen work. That's the real work, I think.
I agree. And that actually
does that make sense?
It does. It does make sense. It does make sense because it really helps, because many men generally would have an outburst and they end up making decisions that they will regret for the rest of their lives. Because imagine a split second, someone decides to lash out, and that's how you get a charge. That's how you end up in jail. That's how you end up maybe passing away, because you never know, just in the fit of rage, that all this can happen. And what would you say generally that we need, the kind of conversation we need to have more often, as far as how to make men in this day and age with all the anxiety happening, how do we stay mentally healthy? And also, how do we share these tips to the next generation, people coming after us?
Oh, I think it's such a great question. I mean, you're already doing it with this podcast, right? Mm-hmm. It's, I think it seems like what guys are lacking is healthy examples, healthy role models of men who are approaching their lives in healthy ways. You know, like, how can I communicate better with my partner? How can I get over this porn addiction? How can I don't know, set boundaries with people so that I can prioritize my self-care? Like, guys need to see examples of this. So I think just having the conversations ourselves and showing up proud while doing it, you know, just like, this is me and this is what I'm going through right now, as you and I are doing right now. I think that's how we do it. We pass it along through story, and we pass it along through our own personal experiences. Seems like that's all that's ever worked. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that's true, because we just share our own personal experience, share how we did it, and we show that we're human. We don't show that, you know, try to cover up and try to be like these macho men that we don't have, you know, feelings that we don't have. We show that we're human. We show that it's possible to really just overcome all these challenges, because we're not the first people to go through them, and won't be the last. Yes. From addictions to anxiety, many people have gone through them and able to overcome. So I think it's very important that we have had this conversation, as far as sharing how this is actually a global problem, you know, whether first world or third world.
First world, third world, there's first world's just as bad. Places like Australia, America, you know, even Canada, it's all the same stuff. We're all experiencing the same problems. Obviously, you know, the economic situations are different, and safety wise is totally different. But I think at the end of the day, like, humans just need people to talk to about whatever they're going through. And most men aren't getting that. Doesn't matter where they live. We have members in India, China, South Africa, different parts of Africa, Europe. You know, guys just don't have people to talk to. And I think that's why guys are experiencing a lot more mental health issues, why they are, you know, ending up having a harder time navigating their challenges. And more importantly, like, that, you know, the suicide rate is so high for men, and violence, and all the things you mentioned before. So I think that it really is the key point here, is that, you know, if you have stuff going on in your life, then we all do, find people to talk to about it. Could be a counselor that you pay, could be a person that likes talking about this stuff, like you and I, could be friends that want to talk about these things. Just because your friends don't want to talk about it doesn't mean that other people don't. So maybe you need to get new friends that do want to have real conversations and be supportive. That's a big part of it too. Like, a lot of people think that their friends are who they are, but like, there's a guy down the street who would love to hear about your challenges and be supportive. So, okay. I thought it was really interesting that in men's group, like mensgroup.com that I started. When I started it, I thought it'd be people who are struggling financially and people who are, from different backgrounds and stuff. And it turns out that it's a lot of like professional men that are doing well financially, family men, a lot of white men. They're just really lonely. And so that seems to be the men who need this kind of thing the most in North America anyway. I'm curious to hear, like, are there men's groups where you live in Kenya? Are there, what kinds of guys do you think could use conversations about their lives? I know that typically trauma is relevant, but guys in Kenya, you know, with all the genocides and stuff that are going on in neighboring countries and stuff, I imagine that guys must face a lot of trauma there. And so they have some real things to talk about. What's your take on it? I'd love to hear your experience of why you got into doing this podcast and you know, what kinds of things guys need to talk about and what the setup is down there.
Yeah. Thanks, Sean, for asking, because I think I'll just go back to how I started from the beginning, how I said that it was actually an assignment. It was a college assignment. And she just mentioned for this class, you guys need to start a podcast on something. And funny enough, up to this moment, the lecturer or the professor of that class is still a subscriber to my podcast, and she still listens.
Yeah, great.
So how I started it was when I noticed there was a lot of domestic violence, a lot of relationship violence, because here in Kenya, when we go through, when especially in the family or in the marriage, when the man is usually stressed, maybe because of the finances, maybe because of the work issues, maybe just even other issues, maybe colleagues and all that, he tends to go back home and maybe now release it on his wife and his kids. And there are a lot of cases of that, of violence, of maybe even death. So I noticed, as far as Kenya, it usually is very demonstrated and comes out, manifests through domestic violence.
Yeah.
Unfortunately. And maybe sometimes even drug abuse. It's a big thing. Because that's one thing also I made sure I need to handle as far as that, because there are a couple of organizations that are not really men's group just for mental health, but maybe for drug rehabilitation.
Yes.
There are a couple of those that we notice most men who, when they feel this kind of stress, this trauma, they usually go to substance abuse, whether alcohol, whether drugs, whether all that.
Yeah.
So there are a lot of rehabilitation centers, groups, maybe from the church, from different organizations that get in and now help men from that point of that. First, we need to get you off, depending from these drugs, to help you, you know, maybe calm down. Then now to help you build yourself up, because you don't, to show you that you don't need to be dependent on this drug, that when you feel stress, when you feel the weight on you, you just said, man, I just need to have a drink, or I need to have maybe a gram or whatever.
Yeah.
So as far as men's group, I would say that there are many men's group that mostly deal with substance abuse.
Yes.
Because that's one of the issues, one of the ways that it really manifests itself as far as men's mental health. When a man, especially in Kenya, is really stressed, it comes up through violence and substance abuse. So these are the two major things that many organizations here are dealing with. It's a very big thing.
Thank you for sharing. And honestly, it's similar in North America, like maybe not to the same degree, but that's what men typically go into, is anger and violence or numbing through substances. And in North America, it might be more booze than drugs, but it's still the same thing, you know? Yeah.
It is. So that's the situation here. And that's actually why I wanted to start my podcast, to get to the position where we can actually discuss such things, discuss why do we get into this substance and how can we stop that? Because it ends up being a cycle. Because you see, maybe someone's father was an alcoholic, you're an alcoholic, the uncles are alcoholics, and the whole family is kind of, you know, messed up in that way.
Yeah, interesting. So here's a question. So like, and I'm sorry that now I'm questioning you, but I'm just curious. So like in North America, like, you know, our kinds of guys, we've guys from all over the world and guys from all different races and places and backgrounds. sexualities, you name it. But like the guys we have in our group, there isn't there's a huge reluctance to share what they're going through at the beginning, but then quickly they open up and they're they can talk about, you know, once they see other guys sharing and not being ridiculed, they go, ah, I can talk about my stuff here. You know, I have noticed in First Nations communities here and other places, people that have been through more trauma, they have more reluctance to share, almost more fear. It's harder to get into it. Do you see guys there in Kenya and around where you are having trouble talking about it? Do you think it's harder, or do you see guys when they're in the right environment, they do feel safe and they do want to talk about it?
I think it's pretty much the same thing. I think it's pretty much a social thing that when they feel that someone else can talk about it, and most of these, as I was mentioning, the rehabilitation centers, they are actually the facilitators, the leaders there are actually maybe former drug abusers themselves.
Right.
So when they see, as you were mentioning, model examples, they see, hey, I was there, I was an alcoholic, I was a substance abuser, and I was able to get out of this, I was able to overcome it, they feel now more welcome to share their, or more comfortable to share their story. So this is actually almost the same thing, that many will be reserved, they'll be ashamed, you know, they'll be feel like, maybe I don't need to open up, or I feel like I'll be ridiculed, or feel like I'm less than. But when others share their story, they feel like, you know, this is not something that is totally, you know, I'm not the only one who's gone through this. And there are others who have gone through this, gone through maybe even worse, and have overcome.
Wow, that's really inspiring. That's good to hear that it's similar for men there, that even though they've been through arguably a lot more trauma, some of them, than guys in North America, or even though that's relative, you know, a guy growing up in a very safe household in a safe country could still have it perceived as much trauma, as much pain. But it's inspiring to hear that guys that have been through terrible stuff like wars and genocides and all sorts of stuff, still in the right environment, will want to talk about it. Wow, that's fantastic.
Yes.
Yeah, what else would you like to know about me or men's group? or any other questions just about men in general that you want to get into?
Mostly also I want to get to as far as relationships, because I mentioned that here in Kenya, there was a prevalence of, you mentioned anger. That's also similarity. So as far as how to, when you're in a place of, when men are going through mental health issues, does that really manifest in their relationships? Does that show, like, is there domestic violence there? Do they get to reports of maybe, I don't know, maybe not even violence, maybe divorce, separations? How has this mental health, maybe the lack of addressing it, affected the family structure there in North America?
Oh, man, I think it's similar. I think all the above, you know, domestic violence, even in some really dramatic cases, you know, people dying. Physical fights and getting injured. Lots of violent crime offenders are now in jail. You know, 98% of people in jail are men. Not out of violent crimes, it's like, you know, 99.whatever% men. And of course it takes a toll on your relationships. It seems to be a human default to take our shit out on the people closest to us. Because we love them so much. There's a lot of feelings there. All that stuff from our past gets brought up, and it's just, you know, we can be nice to our friends, but like when we go home, it can be tough to not be a jerk to your partner sometimes. And so, yeah, if you're not making ways to process those feelings that you're running into in your life, it will come out as anger, because that seems to be the default for men, because it seems to be acceptable. Right? Like growing up as a kid, to get angry is fine. Crying, they tell you to stop. And so then it results in, really poor communication with your partner. Drug abuse, all sorts of substance abuse, and violence, and all those same things.
Okay. And it seems like it's very similar. So when these things are happening, one of the podcasts that I listened, you share about friends.
Yeah.
And while all this is happening, are there points where that people who may observe this saying, hey, I'm seeing there's some trouble between you and your wife and all that. How does the people around them usually come in? Because especially here, it's a very conservative, we're still a very conservative culture where as far as marriages, the families also can get involved and feel like, hey, this needs to happen and you this is how you should handle this. So as far as there, do you feel that maybe friends and families, when these things are manifest and they say, hey, I'm seeing there's something up and this is how you're acting out and it's not like you, do friends and family tend to step in and help out? Or is it more of maybe since the West, everyone is more individualistic and need to handle their own business?
Yeah, everybody's a lot more individualistic. And that's one of the reasons why we have such a mental health problem. You know, you think that with the money and the luxuries we have in North America that like, and the technology that, you know, we'd feel better day to day, but people actually don't. And a big part of the reason why is because we've lost that family, community, neighbor community, you know, at least most people in North America. So yeah, I don't see a lot of families getting involved to help each other in that way. And if they do, it can get emotional and get really, really weird really quickly, you know? So I haven't seen that much in North America.
Okay.
Like I don't talk about my problems with my parents, you know? Like they're like, how are you? I'm like, good. And I'm like, how are you? And they're like, good. And that's it, you know? So yeah, that's not a good situation. And here I've observed that when people do step in, because it's so rare, like if my friends were to jump in and tell me, hey, Sean, looks like this or that's happening, I'd like to think that I've done enough work on myself where I could actually hear that. Some cases I probably couldn't, but I think a lot of people are offended by that almost. They don't like, it's like people don't want to hear that from their friends and family, or they think it's offensive or something. So it just doesn't happen. And I don't see it going that well when it does happen in North America.
So, and I think in that case, the men's group is actually shows to be very significant to these men's lives, because it shows that there's a group of men that you come together and you almost feel like, is it a system where you feel like it's an accountability partner for guys who are maybe going through different addictions, maybe substance, maybe certain content. Do you feel like now through the men's group you're able to keep each other accountable, check on each other, understand maybe this is what you share, this is your triggers, and I also want to help you avoid these triggers so that you don't relapse back, in that you're helping pull each other up from this dark place that you're in?
Yeah, exactly. That's basically what it is. And you know, a lot of these guys, like we said, they're not close to their birth families. They feel like they can't be honest with their partner, their wife, about, or their whatever their romantic partner is, about their like how they're actually feeling, what they're stressed about, the adversities they're facing, because they don't want to look weak. They don't want to stress out their kids, and they've been focused so much on work that they haven't taken time to make friends, and so they don't have anybody to talk to at all, and that's not a healthy situation, right? So they come into you know, there's lots of tools like counseling and podcasts like yours, Renee, and men's groups. There's local men's groups and through the church. There's men's groups at community centers, and there's online ones like mine. But I think a big component of the men's groups that guys seem to like is that it's guys like them. They're going through the same things, so they can relate. That feels really good because it makes you feel less crazy. And then, yeah, there's the accountability piece, which is what you touched on. Guys do hold each other accountable. They're signing up for that. And so, like, it's hard to do that with family or friends that haven't really signed up to do that. You know, like, you need to find people that are as interested in holding each other accountable as you are. And so, yeah, that's one of the reasons why men's groups seem to work as a personal growth tool.
Okay. And thanks for sharing that. And it actually brings more clarity to that, in that it shows the state of loneliness in this age we're in, because many people are just from work, Go home, maybe go to the bar, have a drink or two, just go home. It seems like it's very monotonous and it's very lonely. Even though things are working out and things are moving, they feel still very alone in this whole matrix and the whole life cycle that they're going through. And this brings to my other question as far as loneliness. When these men are going through these changes, and maybe you can, maybe even if you're comfortable, you can touch on yourself. Yeah. When you went through these changes, do you feel that your partner at the moment was really supportive of that? And you feel that when men join two men's group, do you feel that their partners are also very supportive of that, in that they also support them in attending sessions, in connecting with other fellow attendees and fellow members? How important is that for you in finding a partner?
Such a great question, Rene. I think that people have all kinds of different partners. Some men have partners who are emotionally healthy and who are not jealous and who are encouraging of their, their growth. And then lots of people, probably the majority, if not like the vast majority, have partners who haven't done their own work on themselves. And so they're not emotionally healthy. And so they take that on their partner, and that comes out in things like jealousy and control and trying to be unsupportive of their changes because they're scared of what happens if the person does change, scared of losing them or whatever. So I think a lot of men don't have support in that way from their partner. And I think it's the other way too. I think a lot of women who want to make changes, the men get controlling and weird about that too. So we do see a lot of men in men's group who are there secretly. You know, their partners are not supportive of it. And then we see other partnerships where they are supportive. I've had relationships in the past where women made fun of me for doing this kind of thing. They made fun of me trying to build emotional intelligence, trying to manage my anger, all these things. Now I'm with a partner. Her name's Katie. We've been together for 3 years, who has been incredibly supportive and continues to lovingly nudge me to continue my work. And she's doing her own work on herself. And in that case, then it's a lot more easier to get over some of these things that we're trying to, some of these challenges we're trying to overcome,
All right. Yeah, that's very.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does.
I just think people are so different. It's hard to say yes or no. It's like depends on whether they have an emotionally healthy partner or not.
Yeah, it really makes sense, and it's factual, and it's true that there are some partners who, very unfortunate, very sad, that they can be jealous.
Yes.
Jealous of the person you may become after you go through this healing process, after, because it can be. They can actually be very attached to the dysfunction.
Yes, exactly.
They can really be attached to the dysfunctional person, and maybe some of them could be enabling that dysfunctional behavior you have.
Yes. Could you explain why, for your listeners, why people would be attached to the dysfunction? Because that's a really important point, Renee, and I could ramble about it, but I'd love to hear how you think about it.
I think as far as this attached to the dysfunction, in that, maybe they grew up in a place or witnessing this dysfunction, and for them it's home to them. For example, maybe if they grew up with a father who is maybe violent or an alcoholic or a substance abuser or had these bad qualities as far as their character, they will find that as normal, as find that as this is what it is. So when they find this individual, this man who also exhibits the same characteristics, these same character traits, they would connect with that and would say, this is similar to what I'm used to.
Yes.
So, and many of them may not be used to something better. So I think that's how they could be attached to dysfunction, when they're used to seeing this dysfunction growing up. And they say, you know what, this is what, a partner should be. They should have this kind of anger, this kind of, venting out or ranting out. So this is what I would say as far as being attached to dysfunction in growing up in a very toxic environment. Well, these toxic traits are just normal, and this is what you should expect.
Yeah, that's what love is. That's what love is, right? That's how you understand it. Yeah. I can validate that from my own experience. So I realized before meeting Katie that I was choosing partners that had similar communication traits to my dad, which were toxic for me. But there was something so attractive about that, hooky. It would like hook me, you know, in an emotional way that wasn't healthy, but it felt exciting. And really, I was trying to solve that trauma from my childhood. It seemed like I was choosing a partner that was like my dad so that I could try to convince this person to love me in the way that I needed. But of course that doesn't work because they are who they are and they're not going to change. So yeah, I've seen that in my own life as well.
Yeah, that's very true to most people, because many people don't have the luxury of living in a two-parent household that is loving, that there's a good loving environment, good nurturing environment. They get to see all these kind of qualities. And when they get to an environment where it's familiar, then all of a sudden, maybe this man now joins the men's group and wants to say, you know what, I want a different side of me to come out. I want to have better choices, have better habits for myself, to improve my own quality of life for myself or through career, to make better decisions. And now their partner is scared of that. It's like, I didn't sign up for this. Who is this person?
Yes.
You know, and maybe that's how, you know, you experience ladies who are now making fun of you.
Yeah.
They didn't understand, like, what do you mean you're trying to build emotional intelligence? You know, this is what a man is. A man is supposed to be this erratic, you know, ranting, just, you know, reacting angry instead of, response, because that's what they knew. So when you bring out a different side, they're wondering, this is hilarious, this is ridiculous. You can't define this as manhood again.
Yeah. So, and then meanwhile, they're now in relationships where they're getting domestically abused or whatever, because they chose partners who aren't expressive, and they bottled up and then explode. And then, they say that's a man. Well, I say a man is somebody who can be honest about his feelings in like a manageable, controlled way, and who has healthy outlets to express those feelings. For example, if you deal with anger issues, here's a simple one. Go hit a punching bag. Move that anger before you go home to your family. Like, anger is one of those things that needs to be moved, I find, and a lot of men find, you know? Or access a tool like a men's group where other guys are going through the same thing.
Yeah. And that's true. And there's something you mentioned right now in that how you said that you chose a partner who was showing the same attributes as your dad because you also wanted them, you wanted their validation.
Yes.
And I noticed on the men's group, you talk about nice guys and how to establish boundaries.
Yes.
And that's also one of the ways that some toxic people, toxic partners, may actually be attached to dysfunctionality, because they're used to dealing with a partner who has no boundaries.
Yes.
Since they know you always want their validation and, you know, their compliments, they know that, you know, they can get anything from you, and they're used to that. So when you now start setting boundaries, they won't before that. Can we just touch on that?
That's such a great question, Rene. You pick up on really interesting points and ask great questions. I just wanted to say that quickly.
Thank you.
Yeah. So boundaries are something that everybody struggles with, because typically our parents weren't great with boundaries. It's hard to set a boundary with somebody because we're afraid of their emotional response, right? I don't want to tell my dad no because he'll get angry. I don't want to tell my girlfriend no because she'll get sad. Or maybe she'll withdraw love and not give me affection for a while, right? And so ultimately, a lot of people are afraid of those responses, and so they don't set boundaries. And so our parents were like that. That's who we modeled after. So now we go out in the world, and we don't know how to set boundaries. And unfortunately, it adds to toxicity in relationships, because your body is telling you need one thing, and then, but you're saying yes to something that's the opposite. So for example, if my friend says, "Hey Sean, do you want to go for a beer tonight?" And I say, yes, even though inside my body, I feel it could be an anxiety. It could be like just a little bit of resistance, like no, or I could have a reason. A lot of times I don't have a reason, but it could just be like, you know what? I'm tired. I just want to go home and by myself and like rest. Yeah. And so we see a lot of people struggling with boundaries in men's group, and they come to men's group to learn about it. And boundaries are one of the most important things we can learn about in as men and as humans, because it's really self-care. It's an expression of self-care, right? It's like, no, I'm sorry, I can't do this thing, or I can't talk to you, or we can't talk about that, or whatever it might be, the boundary you're setting. It's doing it because you need it. Does that make sense? Did that answer the question? I forgot the original question.
Yeah. I just touching on boundaries and how I was also touching on another answer as far as how someone can be attached to your dysfunction. Yeah.
Yeah. And
that they're used to dealing with someone who has no boundaries.
Oh, yeah, yeah, you know? Yeah, exactly. So when people, that's where I was going. So when people, because we didn't learn about boundaries growing up, when people set them with us, we can get angry. Because it's like, we're not used to it. And, you know, so we might say, they're selfish, or, that's unfair. But also what we're actually upset about is that we're not setting boundaries for ourselves. So if I'm not listening to myself and I'm saying yes to everybody, and then somebody comes along and says no to me, I'm going to find that confronting, because but the inside, my inner voice is going to be upset. Because I'm not taking care of myself in that same way. And so people really get upset when you set boundaries with them sometimes. But really what they're showing is that they're just upset with themselves. And so people can really, that can add to a difficult communication of a relationship, because people aren't used to setting boundaries, you know, or receiving boundaries. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. It does make sense.
Yeah.
And I think this can segue to, I saw that one of the issues that you deal with together as a men's group is divorce and breakups. So
Renee, can I share one more thing on boundaries first?
Yeah.
Sorry to jump in. I just want to finish that topic because I think it's important. Is that okay?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. So I'd love to talk about divorce. With the boundaries thing, it'll help you avoid divorce. So why don't we finish this? There's two ways to think about boundaries. There's setting boundaries for yourself, and then there's receiving other people's boundaries. The better you get at setting boundaries for yourself, the easier it will be to receive and respect other people's boundaries. Oh, you don't want to come up for a beer? Good for you, man. Yeah, have a restful night to yourself. You know, you'll start to take them less personally. And really, there's a couple key points in setting your own boundaries that I want guys to know. The first thing is that you have to get clear on what you want in that situation. So Renee, if you say to me again, hey, Sean, want to come out and have a beer? I need to know I need to know what I'm feeling, you know, and it won't necessarily be clear as to why, but I will very clearly feel a yes or a no in that moment. And it might be very subtle because I haven't been listening to my body, and that voice might be very quiet. It might show up just as a little bit of anxiety or a little bit of resistance. If you're not clear on what you need in that situation, you can say, can I get back to you later on that? But if you feel resistance, you can just say no, you know, and you can say no very graciously. Thank you for the invite, man. I do want to hang out with you, but tonight I'm feeling exhausted. I haven't spent time with my partner, Katie, in a while. I feel like I should go do that. I love you, man, but let's do it another night. You know, that's a healthy boundary of self-care. So then first tip is you need to know what you want. You need to rebuild that muscle of your inner voice, which is like, in the moment when you're asked something, if you feel some feelings, take a second, step away, like we talked about before, figure out what you actually want or need. The second thing is when you're setting the boundary, the reason why people don't set boundaries is because they're afraid of the response. They might get angry. They might get sad, like we talked about before. You need to realize that is not your problem. We are not responsible for people's emotional reactions to our boundaries. Especially if you're doing it out of self-care, and if you're trying to communicate it in like a gentle way, like that's all you need to do. So just number one, you need to get clear on what you want and rebuild that inner voice, that inner compass. Number two, you need to let go of people's emotional responses. So I used to be terrified of people's emotional responses. Now I'm at the point where I actually look forward to it, because if they get angry at me, that's not somebody I want close to me. You know, it's actually a good qualifier to see, is this person emotionally healthy? Will they respect my boundary? Because I have friends now who, no matter what they ask me to do, if I say no, they'll go, okay, man, cool. I respect that, you know, good for you. So if somebody's like, oh, come on, you pussy, come out for a beer, or like, oh, why not? And they get upset or they get angry. Even my dad did this like a 6 months ago. He got really angry on the phone with me over something. Not my problem, you know? So those two parts are, will help guys set boundaries better. So I hope that helps somebody out there who's listening.
And it's what you, those two points are very, very crucial and very, very well presented in that. It summarizes that if you can't, you know, set good boundaries for yourself, you can't receive someone else's boundaries. So it really comes back to self-awareness and self-management, how you manage yourself.
Yes.
And if you're able to express yourself from your own truth. And I like how you mentioned that you really need to understand how you're feeling in that moment.
Mm-hmm.
Because many times who are used to not setting boundaries, many people come from a point of people pleasing.
Yes,
people pleasing. What do they want to hear? What is the best thing that they will want to hear that I will make them happy? Forgetting what I want. And as you said, it's very true that sometimes it takes muscle to build, because it reaches the point where some people are, that voice, that inner voice of what they truly want is so, we'll say, choked
yes.
by the people pleasing.
Mm-hmm.
That you always, from a point of when someone asks you something, you're thinking, what do they want? What will I say that will make them happy? That will make them like me?
Yes.
And it really makes someone maybe even a slave to other people's compliment, other people's acceptance and approval. And it's very important how you said that we need to release it. We need to release, you know, their response to what we really want.
Yes.
And it's a good qualifier. It's a good qualifier. That's true. It's a good qualifier because when someone gets angry, that's not the kind of person that who you would know definitely would want, because they don't want you for who you really are and what you stand for. Because
yeah, they're gonna let their emotional shit. They're gonna throw their emotional shit at you. You know, like he could be angry because he's upset about something else. He could be angry. Mm. He could be getting angry because he had a bad day. Either way, like life is already so hard. You don't need friends like that. You know, yeah. At least close friends. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's one of the qualifiers that is a good qualifier that you've highlighted. I think I definitely want to start to touch on another qualifier you mentioned in another podcast as far as communication.
Great. You did your research. I love it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. and was just trying to understand the movement and how your story. And I really liked how you mentioned that you were very honest, how you said that you had to, cut ties with a friend who was not very good with their communication. And we'll get to that. But if I can now go segue to the point I started about divorce and breakups.
Yes.
In that, when I mentioned how maybe someone can join the men's group, they get to understand how boundaries are. They get to understand to build that muscle, to build that communication, to get that, do away with the bad habits they're used to. Will there ever be a point where they would reach a point where they will need to decide that I can no longer move on in this new stage of my life with the current partner I have? In that
Yeah, it's a good
decision.
Yeah. It's a big decision. Yeah, good question. Yeah. And the answer is yes, all the time. I mean, a lot of people get married when they're very young and they don't know themselves and they don't understand what they need from a partner. And then, you know, they're in this relationship that's super difficult. I can't imagine what it'd be like to be married now to people that I was with when I was in my early 20s. I was a completely different person, you know? Didn't know what I wanted. So I think it's totally reasonable that if things get really difficult to, you know, past a certain point, if it's just constantly difficult and there isn't much value or joy or fulfillment or support in the relationship, emotional support, then what's the point, you know? I know that's not a popular view in the religious communities. it's not a popular view necessarily in spiritual communities. I think there, you need to work on relationships. They need, they are work, mind's work. But I'd say the ratio of, like, honestly, if I'm being honest, like the ratio of like good, bad, terrible, like 15% of the time, maybe 10-15% of the time we're like fighting, you know? And then like 60% of the time things are just good. We're partners, we're supportive. And then 10-15% of the time things are great. And I think that's healthy, you know? That's where I wanted to end up. Past relationships of mine, it was like 60% difficult and fighting and like having difficult communicating. And then maybe like 20% okay, and then, or 25% okay, and then 15% good. And it's like, well, that you're setting yourself up for a very difficult life if you're the person you share your life with is, it's that difficult to communicate with them. So I think there's a place for, you know, realizing that you both could be better with other people or on your own.
Yeah.
Do you agree?
Absolutely. Yeah, I do agree.
Yeah.
And it really takes a lot of humility and a lot of reality check. I would say a reality check that you need to, as you said, you audit our relationships, because sometimes it can be scary in finding out that this relationship that you've invested a lot of time, maybe years, and you're finding out, wait a minute, a lot of this time we've just been difficulty, and it takes a lot to decide to sabotage and say, hey, I don't want another 4 years, another 5 years, another maybe even 2 years or 1 year of dealing with this. And I think I can do better, and I need to have better in this next stage of my life.
Yeah. And I have one quick story to share on that. So before meeting Katie, my current partner, I was single for a while. And before that, I had a partner for 6 years, and she wanted to get married. And we loved each other very much. And she was so beautiful and so lovely and successful. But you know, communication wise, it was difficult in the home, and we wanted different things from our free time and our personal lives. And we just had different core values. And I just felt that. And so when it came time to buying that ring, I just felt like it wasn't the right move. And a lot of people around me felt that it was crazy, but because she's so beautiful and so lovely. But like, the reality is that at home, it was very difficult a lot of the time. And it seemed to be getting more difficult over time. And I didn't want to sign up for a lifetime of that. I thought, I have friends where it's easier than this, where we want to spend time in the same ways and we value the same things. Why can't I find a partner like that too? Sure enough, I decided to end that relationship, which was one of the most difficult things I've ever done. And I went out and I learned more about myself. And then I started dating. And then sure enough, I looked for very specific things. And I met Katie, who's very similar to me, very similar communication style, has similar goals, similar upbringing, similar emotional issues, is very supportive of my own journey and me being emotionally expressive male. And it's so much easier at home now. So, you know, I don't think it's grass is greener. I think it's like there are people that are better suited to you than others. And if you're in a situation where it's really, really difficult all the time for a long time, there might be I guarantee there's somebody out there who might be better, as long as you're doing your own work and not just blaming them too, which is a key point.
Yeah. And I like how you summarize it in that, It sounds like it'd be a very similar case back here, even here, how you've invested so much in a relationship. Guys know that this has been your partner for 6 years.
Yeah.
That's almost past half a decade, which is quite a substantial amount of time.
Yes.
And when you decide to hold off on you know, making that commitment, they will say that you're crazy. And definitely even these conservative communities and societies that I live in, how marriage is a very big thing. And it reaches a point where definitely as a young man, they expect you need to find a partner so that you can, you know, you can have a family of your own and that you can be proud of. And when you decide to hold off on that to get a personal journey to improve yourself, the many wouldn't fathom that, wouldn't understand the whole basis of that. And it actually brings about a question I want us to touch on as far as dating. You mentioned right now that how you said when you ended that relationship, you started to look for some, you went back, worked on yourself and looked for specific things. How important is that in that when you're now looking for a partner, for when you're in your improved self, to look for specific things? Because many would have thought that, hey, Sean had this very beautiful lady. They're just seeing the external. She's beautiful. She looks great. And, you know, who wouldn't want to wife her? But you said, you know what, you guys don't understand my experience.
So yeah, exactly.
How important is it to look for specific things and not just to be moved by the external and the shallowness of the modern partner or dating scene?
Yeah, I mean, if I'm being honest, most of my life I just went for looks and women that were fun and sexy, you know. And because I was a DJ and because I've always had an easy time talking to people, like that came pretty easily to me. And so I've been with a lot of beautiful women, and that's been a very lovely experience. But the reality is that's fun, but does it make for a happy home life? You know, like after the last woman I dated, the sixth year was difficult. I dated a couple of girls after that, just briefly, where there was even more difficult. And I was like, wow, that is a huge risk. Like signing up for a lifetime with that amount of conflict and issues, you know, and in the home. And I was just really scared of that, like really scared of being in a relationship like that. And so while it was really difficult to leave something really good, like beautiful partner and all that, to be alone and sad, you know, I'm so happy I did that because it allowed me to really dig into what I actually need from a relationship. And I started dating and just trying to not to have sex with women, not to be in relationships with women, but just to learn. I'd go on coffee dates with anybody just to talk to them and learn what I like, what I don't like, you know? And I spent quite a few years, 2 or 3 years, just pretty much gathering data in that way. And it was fun, but it was really just more getting clear on what I want. And I would say no to sex a lot of the time. I'd say no to second dates or third dates or being in relationships with these people because I wanted somebody who fit these certain criteria. And my friends were saying that I was being too picky and that I'd never find it. And then sure enough, I meet Katie. And, you know, we've been together for 3 years and the passion's still there. And we find it easy to communicate the vast majority of the time. When we do get into conflicts, we resolve them quickly. And so I think it's so important to be very intentional about your partner. It's that all the research shows us the most important decision you'll ever make in your life for your fulfillment. So like take the time, figure out what you need and go out there and find somebody. Put yourself out there and find somebody who shows up in the ways you need them to.
Yeah, that's a very important point how you've shared. And in my podcast, I actually talk a lot about dating and relationships and finding the right partner.
Yeah.
And it seems that how you just mentioned that when you broke up with this long-term partner for 6 years, you decided to have date other ladies for a short amount of time. Mm-hmm. And you got to understand that the conflict was even more with some of them.
Yeah.
And do you think that maybe was it that you can't fully blame all them? Would you say that it was difficult because you were still figuring it out yourself? Or was there still a certain kind of lady you were going for that you felt that you wanted to have? Was it the kind of lady you're going for, or was it more of yourself? You were still projecting that old habits that got you in the first relationship.
Yeah, good question. Coming out of the sixth year, it was still old habits. I was going for the most beautiful girls possible so that I'd feel better about myself because of the shame that was in my household early on, right? So I was trying to fill that void. However, one of the girls that I dated short term cheated on me in a really, really dramatic way. And I was in the hospital having surgery and she ended up going and, you know, having sex with somebody else. And that made me realize, oh, wow, like I can't allow this. I need to break this pattern, you know? And so after that, it was no longer the old habit. I was seeing things clearly. I needed that painful experience to see things clearly. And from then on, I still had a couple rocky ones, but I think that was more due to just not being the right fit, where my communication needs and emotional needs were different than hers. And so it was just difficult, you know? I think that's a lot of it. I don't think it's just that they were broken or that I was broken. I think it was more that we just needed different things. For example, are you familiar with the book Attached, the attachment styles?
Actually, that one I'm not familiar with.
That's okay. Yeah, it's a great book on relationships. It's the best one I've ever read, Attached. It just talks about how you experienced intimacy growing up will define how you react when you face intimacy in your relationships. And so some people experience intimacy as being pain. And so what they'll do is they'll be more avoidant. So when things get tough, they'll run away. They'll go quiet with their communication. I'm anxious. I'm the opposite. So I get needy. I over-communicate. I realize that these are things about me that I'll never change based on the book and also just my own experience. And so I started saying no to partners that didn't have that same quality. And then I met Katie. And Katie texts me a lot. She's an over-communicator like me. A lot of people would find that unattractive. Mm-hmm. I found it very safe. I liked it. You know, so I think it's just a fit thing. Like your stuff has to fit with somebody else's stuff so that you can live harmoniously. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. It does. It does make a lot of sense. It does make a lot of sense. And I think also now gets to the segue of communication. I also wanted to discuss also our communication as far as now understanding each other, because how you're saying that it's very important that you find someone who's a good fit. And many people right now believe that, you know, for most of these relationships, generally, there has to be a compromise. So how do you get to manage that, in that you're not over-compromising, in that you're not giving more than you are reciprocating? Because no one wants to be in a situation such as that. How do you manage that?
That's a great question. The real answer, Rene, is choose a partner where you don't have to compromise much in the first place. That, for me, that's the answer, right? Because before, I was compromising with that beautiful, fancy woman. Like on the weekends, I'd want to go out and surf. She'd want to go to a fancy hotel and have dinner. So one night I'd do that. The other night I'd go surf. Now I'm with a partner who wants to surf both those days. So that's a very simple example. But like, I think being intentional about your partner will help you avoid a lot of compromise in the future. And if you are in a situation where you're compromising a lot in your relationship, I think it's what we talked about before. It's like stepping away from, you know, situations and figuring out what you really need in a situation, what's really important. And because every relationship does require some compromise, even with Katie, there's still days where even little things, she'll want to watch this movie, I want to watch that movie. She wants Thai food, I want some other kind of food. She wants to go to this place for the weekend, I want to go to that place, right? And so there's, I need to go and sit with myself and go, is this really important to me? Or is this one of those things that I can sacrifice for the betterment of our relationship? You know, there's like, I've heard it put this way. There's actually three people in a relationship. There's you and her, and then there's the relationship itself. And so sometimes it does make sense to deprioritize your own, you know, preferences and prioritize the relationship. So for small things like what I mentioned, movies, daily plans, fine. But like core value stuff, you can't compromise. It'll kill you. It'll make you lose your soul. So that's how I think about it. Does that make sense? That's a bit of a ramble.
No, it does make sense. It does make sense because it reaches a point where, as you we had covered before, I think just a few moments earlier, is that you really need to self-evaluate and know what's good for you, understand from your truth. And that also brings me to what I want to mention right now is how you mentioned that you're going for the looks because it wanted to make you feel better about yourself.
Yes.
What are some of the things that you're noticing men are doing to make themselves feel better about themselves? Maybe is it finding a beautiful lady? Maybe is it making more money, a certain figure? Is it buying a certain house, having a certain zip code, as you think you call it over there, driving a certain cars? What are a couple of things that you'll notice men are doing just to feel better about themselves, even though deep down they're still dealing with the void that needs something more quality to fulfill?
That's a great question, Renee. My honest thoughts are that most people are walking around day to day trying to fill up voids and being completely unaware of it. Like looking back at my early adulthood, I made decisions about my career from void, the women I was dating, the activities I was doing, the amount of exercise I was doing, the places I traveled to, the cities I chose to live in. It was all from this place of I'm not feeling good enough. For example, my first company that I started was a online business, a tech company. And I'm not a tech person and I'm a people person. I need to be having conversations like this. I should have been a counselor, dude. Here I am starting this big technology company. And I struggled with it. And the reason why I was doing it is because I wanted to be able to say, hey, I work in the music industry. I'm a music industry executive. And because I needed that validation of people going, wow. And I chose a couple careers like that. So I see it showing up in the where people live, like the ways this manifests itself, the creative ways that people individually find to fill this void are never ending. There are so many. My honest belief now is that most of our decisions are driven by it, unless you've done the work to clear that stuff out. So yeah, the food you eat, the car you drive, where you live, the choice of your partner, your friends, even, you know, I used to try to surround myself with friends that were celebrities or athletes or whatever, because I thought that would mean something about me, you know? Yeah. The clothes you wear, I mean, everything. Yeah. It's all. And I saw that a lot of these guys, these entrepreneurs that were in this men's group I started before, they looked successful and happy, but they were actually driven by fear, by void, scarcity. That's why they worked so hard to create these big companies. Yeah.
That makes a lot of sense in that fear and the need to look important instead of being important, instead of working and operating from your truth, really brings a lot of unfulfillment. And I also want to touch on, from this is a good segue to purpose, in that instead of working from a place of fear or a place of needness to look important, how do we operate from a place of purpose, in that maybe this is what I want to do? Maybe if you choose to be a counselor instead of, you know, trying to start this company for someone else's validation, to impress, you know, strangers. What if I choose to be a counselor, and maybe it's not maybe the fanciest or the most, you know, opulent lifestyle, but it's what gives me fulfillment. It's what makes me happy to wake up in the morning and go and serve other people. How do we operate from a place of purpose and that brings out fulfillment and contentment?
It's a great question, man. I think that it goes back to what we were talking about before, about how life is an inside job. Like the more we can build a relationship with this stuff in here, the more we can get clear around that. I don't think there's another answer. I think it's like, besides going out and getting experiences in the world, so you get data, you know, what do I like, what I don't like. But so I think when you're young, it's like go out and experience stuff or to get data. But then the second part, which is most important, is to like make space to feel into those things. Like, what am I really drawn to? Like, what would I do if nobody, like if we were living in a world where nobody would find out about it, if I was the only one on the earth, what would I do with my time? You know, how would I spend my time? I would spend my time surfing. I would spend my time probably talking to the one or two or three people on the earth with me about our emotions or this experience of being a human, you know? Like, so the more that you can step away from life and society and have stillness and silence, that might be going for a walk. That might be going swimming. It might be just playing with your dog. But like these moments where we just get to be with ourselves and ask ourselves those questions. I think that's the move, because society is promoting junk food values. Society says money and beauty and fame and Instagram likes will make you happy. The problem is that all the science shows that it does not. What makes you happy is a meaningful relationship, community, good health, and purpose, right? And so if you can step away from society, even for a couple minutes a day, and just feel into like what you need and what you want, I think that's the move.
Yeah, that is the move. That is the move. And I like how you present it as junk food values. In that they're supposed to make you feel good, but the shallowness and the hollowness that it results to is very deep. And just to mention on these junk food values and going into fatherhood, I really wanted to get into that, in that these values are now more propagated and they will still be more emphasized through the media, through the social media, through the content that is being brought out, the movies, all that, even reality TV shows that are all over Netflix, popular. Yeah. How should men and fathers in particular protect their children and give them the real values, the real values that will help shape them to be wholesome individuals in a society that wants them to be just part of the rest and actually dysfunctional?
Wow, that's such a great question, Renee. And the short answer is that I don't know 100% because I don't have children yet. What I can say is that I've seen a lot of men in men's group, and I've seen a lot of my friends that have children. And what I've observed, the answer is that if you prioritize creating an emotionally healthy child, so not using things like shame and disapproval with him or her, teaching him about his feelings, teaching him what purpose is, him or her. And then the most important thing is just being an example of the values you want that kid to take on. They will take those on. So I have friends who are like really spiritual and kind of hippies and whatever, and the kids end up the same, you know, even though they're still exposed to all the social media and all the TV and all everything. Mm-hmm. It's like, if you're living away from that stuff and if you're happy at home, and if you know you're living a life that looks good, the kids will pick up on that, you know, and they will grow to be the same way. Generally, I think that's the answer. I don't know. What do you think?
I think that's true as well, because as you mentioned, model examples, in that there are many parents that, you know, parent from a point of do as I say, not as I do.
Yeah,
but you know, when we watch more than what you say, we watch you have these habits and, you know, act out these actions from a day-to-day basis, anyone would pick it up. Even though you say don't do it, we see you do it, and it shows that you validate and you actually condone this behavior. So it really boils down to model examples. We really need to have a lot of examples and pay attention to the example you're really bringing out and what you're teaching them. And also definitely, as you said, to be in a community, because where that these values are also praised and they're exercised, so that it's ingrained with them, in that they don't feel that it's just this host household that these principles are practiced. Even when in school, you can find some friends who believe in the same values as you do, and it brings out a safe space. I think that's very true. And I also want to go into motivation as far as how you said, again, on the junk food values. It can be very easy, as actually, even as if you just take the analogy of junk food itself, when you want to get healthy habits, when you start eating healthy, it reaches a point where you start craving the old junk food, you know, the fast food, the how it tasted, the salt and the fat. Because the carbs taste good compared to the salad that you're supposed to be taking.
Yes.
So how do you get motivation to, or just the drive to sustain the drive to keep pushing and stay disciplined in the course of becoming a better person?
It's a great question, Renee. My experience is that my motivation to be that way is to keep pushing, you know, or to keep trying to grow, or to keep, you know, moving through life's adversities is that there is no other way. You know, like, what's the other option? You retreat, you know, you hide, you numb with substances. All those options just make things worse. You know, so like, food's a good example. Food is something I've always struggled with. That's my substance. Luckily, I never got into drugs too much. Luckily, I never got into the hookers or gambling or any of that stuff. Booze, I don't really find it that. It doesn't grab me, you know, but food does. So if I'm angry or sad or stressed, like, I will smash food, you know, pizza, ice cream, cookies, chips. It's been my escape, my warm, comfortable blanket since I was like 3 or 4, you know. So like, why am I continuing to battle against that and trying to be healthier and fitter? Well, because what's the other option? If I keep eating that stuff, it's going to make things worse. I'm going to get a chronic illness, which I've already had. I'm going to get fat, and then I won't like how I look myself in the mirror. That'll haunt me daily. Like, the other option is not good. So I have to lean into this stuff. Like, it's just one of those realities, this fundamental first principle truths of life that you can't get around. We're all going to get hit with adversities. Either you choose how you respond. You either show up or you don't. However, if you don't, often what happens is things get worse.
And that's true, in that how you said it quite plainly is that you can't run, you can't retreat, you can't go back. You have to really put yourself in a mental state that there's no way you can go back or slide back to who you used to be.
Yeah.
And it reaches a point where you have to really completely cut ties with who you used to be and really look forward to becoming a better person. I think there's a quote by, I think it's called Alexander the Great, called burn the ships.
Burn the boats, yeah.
Yeah, burn exactly. The boats.
Yeah, so you can't retreat.
You can't retreat. So it's just, you just have to move forward. And it's really a powerful strategy to use.
There are people that don't do that. There are people that just like always run from stuff and like don't address any stuff head on. And it can look like these people have pretty easy lives. The reality is, though, is that in their private lives, I've seen people like this. It's a complete mess, especially especially the most important things, their relationships, their health, all that stuff. So, anybody who's actually happy and successful typically has an attitude where they just accept that adversity is part of life and you have to move through stuff. That doesn't mean you need to tackle everything all the time. You can take breaks from facing the adversity. You don't have to face your daddy issues right now. Maybe it's not the right time. Maybe 3 months from now would be better. But, you know, eventually you got to face this stuff. Otherwise, your life's going to get worse.
Not true. And would you say that the state of masculinity right now, or men generally in the world, some would say that for men who actually grew up or are used to living in societies where things are catered for, it feels that they have become more, we'll say, complacent, in that they haven't been used to or aren't used to handling hardships.
Yeah.
And handling discipline and handling, understanding that it really takes a lot of effort, a lot of discipline, a lot of focus to really get great things done. And gets the great structures in place that many of these men enjoy in these very civilized countries, societies generally.
This is a good question, man. I think that a lot of people in third world countries look at places like America with envy. Like, wow, what would it be like to live there, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the reality is that, especially since, like, you know, World War II, for example, like, there hasn't been a lot of adversity in America. And people could say they've been through their own adversities, different groups of people have been through adversities, but generally there hasn't been any big wars in America. There hasn't been any, you know, crazy, really crazy things going on. And as a result, like, when the pandemic hit, a lot of people lost their shit, like, couldn't handle it. Breakdowns, going crazy, conflict with lots of people. You see stuff in the States getting crazy after the pandemic, riots, all sorts of stuff. And just wild stuff happening. And my opinion or theory is that it's because we've had a couple generations of people, a couple decades worth of people who haven't had to face any real adversities, right? Like my grandfather was in World War II. He was in a trench for like 4 years in the mud with wearing a gas mask. You know, it's like, and people during the pandemic couldn't sit at home and watch Netflix for 2 weeks until we figured out what was going on. They lost their shit and were getting angry at everybody around them and going out and rioting and looting. And it's just like, harden the fuck up, people. Like this, the stuff you have going on in Kenya is so much more difficult than so. Yeah, I think there's something real there. I think there's something. I think the people that grew up in, you see this with really wealthy people. They're not happier. Like really, really wealthy families are not happier because they've grown up not having to face adversity, not having to understand that part of life. And so when it happens, they don't know how to feel about it. They don't know how to think about it. And they go kind of crazy.
Okay. And that's true. And as you mentioned, the last point, as far as very wealthy people, because even here in Kenya and in Africa, and where I live, especially the capital city, which is in Kenya, Nairobi, there's the middle class, the upper class, and the lower class. So
yes,
when even in these countries that maybe are not as developed as first world countries, there's also the classism and the economic class. People who grew up in that may not really endure the same experiences that others who got to endure more. Because honestly, even as far as Kenya, it's been, compared to other countries, especially on, of course, on the continent, it's been fairly peaceful.
Fairly peaceful, yeah.
Fairly peaceful from maybe even your girlfriend confirmed from the places she visited in the country. There are a lot of tourist attractions, good flora and fauna, the beaches. I think we have one beach that is, we'll say the Diani Beach, that has won the best beach on the continent five years in a row.
Oh, wow. Yeah, really?
Yeah. Yeah, very so it cool. gets a lot of tourist attractions. So when you're surrounded by a lot of this lush environment, the good serene, sights that you enjoy, it actually could make you complacent from achieving more, and that's very important. And
I think it was Seneca Seneca's a Stoic philosopher. He said, "I pity men who don't face adversity, because adversity is the gift of life. You know, it's like that's where you learn the most. That's where the opportunities actually lie." To do things better, to get your goals and your dreams. It's like, these people that don't face as much adversity, it's actually a curse.
That's true. And yeah, I think we need to understand also, be accommodative of anyone's adversity and what they went through, and get to consider that and get to understand that really makes them who they are.
Yeah.
It's true that it's human nature, actually, that we want to go through the easy route.
Yeah, and it's one of the things that allows us to connect is adversity. Like the fact that you and I felt like we've had adversity with expressing our feelings is now, or whatever, expressing our experiences as men, stuff that's on our minds, that's allowing us to connect now. And now we're going to build a friendship, you know, and now I'm going to bring you into men's group because you're doing good work. And it's like, you know, there's lots of benefit that comes from going through these things.
It's very true that these things model you and help you to actually even get the very true character, to align your character, because they see that character really needs to be is what is left after you go through these adversities. You really understand what you really stand for when rubber hits the road. Because it's very easy for someone to say they're a good person when they've never been put in a situation where they really had to make tough choices. Because these tough choices really show what you really stand for at the end of the day. Yeah, and it's true, because can we get into and touch on maybe career?
Sure.
In that how men are navigating these different spaces, how we mentioned socially, how we mentioned from themselves, relationship, So as far as career and as how we started off with defining what is fulfillment, maybe you can just, these two things could be a little bit similar for most. What is the true definition of success for you?
Oh, that's a great question, Renee. I'm still trying to figure it out, but I think that it's become more and more simple as time goes on. I want to do work. I'm successful if I get to do the things I love with my free time, if I have a healthy relationship that makes me feel good, if I'm doing work that I at least partly enjoy and I find meaningful. Like, and so for me, that's success. The fact that I have a dog that I really enjoy, and the fact that I can pay my bills doing something that's good in the world. You know, I don't need to be wealthy, but I do want to have enough money to not stress about paying my bills, you know? So like that'd be part of success for me too. I want to have good friendships and community that are going to be there for me as I get older. You know, that's success. But I think especially it's just like living life in the way that I want to, you know? So like, maybe that means it sounds immature to lots of other people who don't understand, but I need to be surfing almost every day. And the reason why is because that's where I connected with my father. That's where I saw my father having the most fun. That's really the only place I saw him have fun. And him and my brother and I played in the ocean every day on vacation, every year. And so for me, it's very important to be out there in the ocean. And so that's my definition of success. For a lot of people, they'd see me out in the cold or out in the snow going surfing, and they go, that's not success. So again, it's about going inside and figuring out what's really important to you, you know?
And I agree, because for me, success, that, and I feel we connect on this, is that how you're able to be free as far as understanding that your needs are, basic needs are taken care of, that your quality of life is fairly good, and that the quality of life is fairly good enough to be able to be there for your loved ones, to be able to engage in the things that you really want to do and give back and make a valuable impact to the people around you. And that's what I would say I define success. And I also agree that society really tries to push this narrative that success is getting more and more and more. We also, especially from the social media platforms, how you're seeing people with, like, there's always a new car out, there's always some new clothes out, there's always a new gadget out. There's always that, some people say that if you haven't been to this destination or that destination, you haven't really lived. So it's very important that we get to really filter those narratives and understand what is really good for us as individuals, and what we really want to do with our lives.
Yeah, fantastic. I agree. Yeah, Renee, we're hitting the 1:45 mark, and I'm starting to feel a little tired. So, if you have any more questions, let's do it, and then we can wrap.
Yeah, no problem.
That was a good example of a self-care boundary right now. I felt uncomfortable saying that because I didn't want to make you feel bad, but I felt like I should say it because I'm feeling pretty tired just in general today.
Yeah, definitely. I definitely understand. Yeah. And I resonate with that. I was going to mention that as well.
Yes.
Because over here in Kenya, it's 10:41.
Yeah, it's late. I'm surprised you're still so with it. I knew it was late in the evening. Yeah.
But anyway, I think anyone who will listen to this will have a lot to get value from. There's a lot of valuable conversations we've had.
Okay.
And I think we can just wrap up in that, in summary, as far as men's health, as far as just man's community, why, for anyone who's listening and wondering why do I need to join a men's group or the men's group that you founded, why do I need to be connected with another group of men who may be going through the same experiences that I have and are still trying to navigate how to, you know, understand masculinity in this day and age? Why is it so important to connect with this kind of men?
Yeah, a great question, Renee. I think it's like all the research shows that it's really important for your well-being to talk to some people about it, you know, and typically it has to be people who are going through similar things. Otherwise, they can't relate and that doesn't feel very good. But most of all, I think it's like, it's just the most efficient way to get over a challenge. Like you can Google and you can read a book and you can listen to a fantastic podcast like this. But to have somebody sit there who's going through the same thing, or guys sit there, a group, and listen to the specifics of what you're going through, and then to give you empathy. Wow, man, that sounds difficult. And also guidance. Here's what I would do. That I can't think of a more efficient way to problem solve, to get through that tough thing that you're facing. And so I think men's groups are a tremendous tool to overcome challenges and end up, you know, feeling better and becoming a better man. And it could be a local men's group at your church or in your community. You could start one of just your friends. Maybe it could be casual or it could be structured. Or you can join an online one like mensgroup.com. You can try it out, see if you like it. And then if you do, you can stay in it. If you don't, we can send your money back. So it's there's lots of options out there. I just encourage anybody listening to try these things, you know. Try a coach, try starting friends, try finding people in your community that want to talk about these things.
Yeah, and I think that's a good place to actually to wrap up, in that men just need to reach a point where they feel comfortable reaching out.
Yes.
And it's a really good call to action to leave that guys, wherever you're listening to this from, it's okay to reach out and say, guys, I'm not okay.
Yeah.
I'm not okay. I need help and I need someone to help me. And guys, we're out here all over the world going through the same situation, trying to navigate different challenges that are coming up.
Yeah.
And we're ready to, you know, figure it out together. And I think that's a good way to really call all of us to come together and connect, because wherever the world, there are still some challenges and that you need to, you know, that can be overcome when you're with the right partnerships. So thank you so much, Sean, for your time. It's been very engaging, and definitely I will want to engage more. I'm looking forward to joining the men's group and sharing that, and sharing everything that we're able to benefit from each other. I hope also other listeners will also want to join in. I'll definitely, when we get to edit the recording and publish it, definitely we'll tag the link.
Yes, please. I'd also love to have you on the men's group podcast too, because I think it's really interesting to hear, you know, for guys over here, what's going on in another part of the world and how guys like you are facing the very similar challenges to them. I think that makes very, very humanizing, right?
Yeah, very.
I think it's fantastic. So
definitely look forward to also being on the men's group podcast.
Yeah, and you're a tremendous interviewer. You're doing great work. You ask fantastic questions. And so keep up the great work, Renee. Thanks for having me here. I really enjoyed it.
No, thank you. Thank you, Sean. So yeah, we can end on that. And you can continue surfing.
Definitely. Yeah, exactly. Now I'm headed to the waves. Yeah.
Guy Code with Renee Osorio.